Accession number 27302, Reel 4.
Mr. Dobbs, Reel 4. Where did you go to after Aldershot, Mr. Dobbs?
Went to Petworth Park.
And what were you doing there?
We were in tents in some woods.
And what kind of work were you doing?
Well, nothing specific, but just the usual training and that sort.
Where is Petworth Park?
Sussex.
And were you attending courses at this time?
I went on a course from Petworth Park to a course in Petworth Village. It's a very old-fashioned place, cobblestones and that. I was there for about 10 days on this junior NCO's course.
What kind of things did they teach you?
Well, how to control men, for example, taking parades and usual training.
So you had to take men on parade to show that you could do it?
Yes, you had to more or less pass a note. You had to show you had the capabilities of handling men.
Had you been promoted at all by now?
Yes, I was a full corporal in those days. I'd been promoted previous to that. But I've not written it down, I just can't remember that.
Where did you go next?
From Petworth Park, we went to... let me think for a moment. Oh, Broadmain, Dorset. That's another little village outside Dorset, the town of Dorset. About 5 miles southeast of Dorset.
What date was this?
Well, the trouble is, I didn't put the dates down.
We're still in 1941, though, aren't we?
Yes, yes.
What was happening to you there?
We were in Nissen huts there. And... one of the lads went absent without leave from there. And the company commander asked me if I would go to Liverpool to pick him up. And I had to take a man with me. He said, pick who you want to go with you as escort duty. So I picked a lad who lived in that area. It gave him a chance to call in to see his family, you see. That was the object of it. We went to the police station and signed for him. And caught the train back to London, which was a very boring train from Liverpool to London. The chap I had with me, he was dozing off in the corner. And I was reading the paper. And all of a sudden, this prisoner, Edmunds, he made a bolt for the door, and I tripped him up. I said, where are you going? He said, I'm bursting. And when I said, if you want to go anywhere, let me know and I'll come with you. I'll stand at the doorway. So he said, there's no way of me of getting off the train. It's doing about 90 bloody miles an hour. I said, I know, but you can play silly buggers and run along the corridors. So... We returned to our compartment and everything went well. We got back to London and from there we went down to Dorchester, to Broadmain. He got 25 days, I think, of detention for being absent without leave.
Was that pretty, when you say detention, was that pretty harsh punishment?
I would think so. I never was on it myself, but... you were confined to barracks, and naturally, and I think you had a lot of fatigue jobs to do.
Would you say that you were becoming a highly trained unit by now?
Oh, yes, yes, aye. Aye, we were constantly training and keeping up to date with everything, I suppose.
And were you well received wherever you went?
Yes, by the locals, yes, we were, aye.
Did they invite you into their homes?
When we were at Liverpool, we were invited into the people's homes. But people were very sociable outside, everywhere else we went.
Where did you go to then? How long were you at this particular place?
We were at, let's see, this is Broadmain where we're at now, Broadmain south of Dorchester. We were there for a few weeks. Strangely enough, wherever we went, we were only there about 3 months before we moved on to somewhere else.
But you got quite a lot of moves, haven't you?
Oh, a tremendous amount. Yes.
And when you moved, when your battalion moved, were the other battalions of the brigade moving with you?
Well, we were never in contact with them. Even our own company was on detachment from the rest of the battalion. And we never saw them very often. That's why when the company commander asked me if I would go on escort duty to bring this fella back from Liverpool, normally the CO would take that responsibility on, or he would send a regimental guard, regimental police. But with us being on detachment, our own company commander had full responsibility to nominate who we wanted, sort of thing, for this job.
Who was your company commander?
At that time, it was a Colonel Welsh, an old gentleman who wore a monocle in one eye. Typical old gentleman of the old brigade sort of thing. But the funny thing about it was, there was one time when he introduced night into day. And every parade we did, normally by day, was done at night time. Reveille was at 6 o'clock at night. Breakfast at 7. Parade started after that. There was one particular night we went, started out on a route march. And it didn't start at 9:30 at night time. We did about 10 miles. And everybody was feeling very weary and tired. Coming back, we saw the gates of our camp. Oh, thank God for that. But instead of him turning into the camp, he went right around the perimeter again before we ended up in the camp. I tell you, he wasn't very popular that night. But
what was the purpose of that, switching from...
I don't know. It was just a silly idea that he came up with. Everything that we normally did by day was done by night for that week. We were glad when that week was over, I can tell you, to get back to normality.
What happened next?
Well, we moved to Bradford Down Camp. That was about 3 or 4 miles farther on from where we were. That again was intense. And in the evenings, if we were not on duty, we used to go down into Weymouth for social evenings, that sort of thing, dances for them, they wanted to dance, so if you could afford it, go into a pub. That was Bradford Down Camp. And also we did a lot of house clearing. They were teaching us how to do house clearing. Because Weymouth had been bombed very heavy, and there was tremendous amount of ruins there. And this was ideal spot to do house clearing or trying to root out snipers and that sort of thing, imaginary snipers. But it was hard graft going out these old broken down buildings, and but it's part of our training, I suppose.
Can you say that the usual method of attacking a house or a building was there some kind of routine that you had to follow?
Well, it varied, because in these exercises, they were not always, they didn't always conform to what you had to go through in action. You had to approach things as you saw the lay of the land, sort of thing.
Were you being taught fire and movement tactics?
Yes, yes. Aye.
And not the old First World War in a line with your
main thrust? No. We went forward in twos or threes, something like that. You never went in a straight line or an extended order. Usually creeping up along hedgerows or ditches.
Making use of ground?
Yes.
Can you break down your company for me? How was it constituted?
Well, your company was divided into platoons, three platoons, and each platoon had three sections. Each section had about, normally they would have a corporal, a lance corporal, and about 10 or 11 men for each section. And then you would have your platoon sergeant and platoon officer, which would normally be a lieutenant.
And what was the weaponry held in a company? I know you obviously had your own rifles.
Yes.
But what were the additional weapons they held?
Well, at platoon headquarters, they would have mortars.
They'd be 2-inch mortars, were they?
Yes, 2-inch mortars, aye.
Bren gun?
Bren guns, yes. But of course, sometimes we had Bren guns in with us all the time, sort of thing. There would be a Bren gunner, you see.
That was in each section?
Yes.
A Bren gunner?
Yes.
And how was his ammunition carried for the Bren?
Well,
was that dispersed amongst
them? They used to have the cartridge containers. They would be about 8 or 9 inches long, and maybe just over an inch wide, and they would fit into your pouches on the side of your weapon equipment.
So each man in a section would have some...
Sometimes they would carry some of the Bren gunners.
Some of the Bren gunners ammunition,
yes.
And then, of course, you'd have presumably a supply of grenades.
Yes, although, there were times when each man would carry a grenade. But that didn't happen all the time. It wasn't very often we carried hand grenades personally.
The bayonet that you were using, was it the old-fashioned pre-war?
They were the First World War type, the ones we had.
You hadn't got the shorter ones yet?
No.
So what else were you doing in this area? Was there anything else that...
No, not particular.
You seemed as though in this area you were kind of on a coastal defence situation.
We were nearly all the time stationed near the coast. Yes. We went from Bradford Down Camp to Little Breedy, that's near Abbotsbury in Dorset. That was a little village off the beaten track. We were in huts in this place, and at weekends there used to be a couple of trucks laid on to take us down into Weymouth to spend the evening. They used to be called Liberty Trucks. At Weymouth, our favourite watering hole was the Star and Garter pub. Well, they had a snooker table there in one of the rooms, and we used to like playing snooker then. But there was one time when my mate said, "What about having to go to the dance for a change?" I couldn't dance, you know. I said, "All right." So he goes in, and right, he said, "Now let's pick a woman and have a dance." So I said, "You go ahead, I can't dance." He said, "It's easy, man." He said, "I'll show you how to dance." He said, "I'll take the ladies' part." And we were shuffling around, falling over each other's feet. We were right around the room and come back to where we started from. And then we heard these wolf whistles, and they were from our own mates, you know. I said, "That's it, that's my dancing finished."
Were liaisons with some of the girls?
Fun.
Were you meeting the girls?
Some of the girls, yes. Some of the lads did, rather, meet up with girls. But at this time, the Yanks were coming over. And down the south was saturated with Americans. Of course, the British girls didn't want to know any of the British Tommies then. Because the Yanks, they could give them chewing gum, silk underwear, chocolates, all the things that was on rations to us people. So it was nothing to see a Yank going down the road with a girl on each arm and him smoking a big cigar, you know. And they just make... It caused a bit of friction between the British troops and the Yanks. There was many a bust up in Weymouth.
Did you meet any of them yourself? What opinion did you form of them?
Well, I thought that they were too full of themselves, you know. Too big-headed sort of thing. That was my opinion of the Yanks.
They were coming over to save us?
Supposed to be, aye. Well, of course we depended on their supply of trucks and ammunition and everything else that we needed, you know. And of course they came over for the purpose of D-Day, which eventually came.
So how long were you in this place?
A few weeks again at Weymouth. And there was one night when, usually at weekends when we come out to the pubs, we used to collect under the big clock on the seafront there to wait for our transport back to the camp. And of course, when all the Welsh lads got together, they would break out into song. And we always had a good audience, you know, for the local people who stop and listen and that. And we had one chap in particular. He was called Terry O'Connor, and I always remember his name. And he had a marvellous voice. And he used to sing this one particular song, Mexicali Rose, Stop Crying, I'll Come Back to You Some Sunny Day. I don't remember the rest of the words, but anyway, shortly after Terry got a letter from home to say that Merthyr, where he lived, had been badly bombed. So he was concerned about his family. So he took the letter to the CO, to the company commander, who granted him leave on compassionate grounds. Well, Terry goes away, but he didn't return when he should have done. He was away about a week, and the police picked him up, the local police. So once again, the company commander came and asked me if I would go and bring him back. So, and again, he said, pick whoever you want to go with you. So again I picked a fella from, this time from Swansea, who lived close by. So we go, we get away on the train and get down to Swansea. I spent the night at Beaufort, my hometown, home village rather. And Les Wilkes, the other lad, he went on to Swansea and stayed the night with his people. And we arranged to meet at the police station the next morning. So we did, and I signed the register, taking full responsibility of Terry O'Connor. And when we came out of the police station, he was getting upset. He wanted to see his wife before we took him back to camp. And of course, I remember what the police sergeant said to me. He called me to one side before I signed the register. He said, "Now be careful of him." He said, "He could be crafty." So when we came out and Terry wanted to go and see his wife, I remember what the police sergeant said, "Be careful, because he could be crafty." I said, "Terry, if we take you home, there's to be no nonsense, mind." He said, "I'll give you my word." So we took him home, and we were invited into his house. And then he wanted to see his wife for a few minutes to discuss personal matters. I said, "Terry, now don't try anything bloody funny, because we'll catch you before you go very far." He said, "No, just give it a few minutes with my wife alone." So he went into another room, and he stuck to his word. He came out, and we came back to the train and came back to camp. And again, Terry got 25 days detention. So that was another escort duty done.
Was there a lot of problems with the men and getting back home?
On occasion there were, yes. Especially if they'd gone to places where they'd been bombed. They were very concerned about their families not know. Because pretty bad sight some of those places were.
Was mail coming to you quite often? Were you getting your mail?
Oh, yes, yes. In this country, yes, yes. We had to wait a few days when we were abroad, like. Aye.
And were your letters, were they... were your letters censored?
Well, they were in this country, but not so strict as they were when we were abroad. Because we were warned not to put anything to say where we were and what battalions were and to give any kind of information. We were warned against that in case our letters were censored.
Was it again a short stay in this area?
Yes. Oh, now, this was the time there was a big exercise called Spartan. This was in August 1943. This exercise took 10 days. It involved thousands of troops from all regiments. And I think the object of this was for the benefit of the senior officers in controlling movements of large convoys of troops who were crisscrossing each other throughout the south of the country. I don't know if that exercise went on in the north. I don't know. But, we were short of transport in those days. And in order to get us to move about, they used to hire, or they took control of disused buses. Well, the ones we had to take us about on Spartan exercise was old buses with no windows in, bumped and dented and God knows what. But as long as the engine ticked over, that was all right. You could climb aboard and move it away. And we used to put our ground sheets up over the windows to stop the rain blowing in. And then we couldn't see where we were going. It was very funny at times.
And what was your company's role in this?
Well, we did nothing, actually. I think this was more for the benefit of the officers, controlling convoy movements, you know.
It's basically movement.
Yes. But we would pull in at night time, different places, and then set off the next day.
And when you pulled in at night time, where did you sleep?
Well, there was one place where we went, we pulled into this big estate, big mansion, and we were billeted in the stables. There was no horses in, but the stables were in magnificent condition, you know. And we found out later that this place was owned by Lord Huntley and Palmer's Biscuits. And it was his estate that we stayed in that night. So that was very exciting. But those stables were wonderful. They even had a piano in one stall for the stable lads who were sleeping up above to enjoy themselves.
How long again were you in this area?
Well, this was during the exercise Spartan. 10 days on the move, you know, pulled in one night, and then you move off again.
When did you start getting sufficient transport? When was that beginning to come through to you?
Well, this was in 1943, when we still were short of sufficient transport for the job. And on this particular exercise, we pulled in again, at an airfield, and this was at Bovington in Hertfordshire. We had a bivouac around the perimeter of the airfield, around the hedges and that. And it was very cold weather. And so the lads had to make bivouacs out of the ground sheets. And it was a bit of cold and raining. And they hadn't had a cigarette for days. And they were getting bolshy. So I said to another fellow corporal, I said, there must be a village around here somewhere. We can get some, buy some cigarettes. So I said, what about sneaking off and trying to find one? He said, but we're not supposed to leave the area. I said, come on, let's take a chance. So I didn't realise how far it was. It was a bloody long walk from the airfield down to the village. On such a steep hill, you know. So when we came to the village, the first pub we saw, we went in. And when we opened the door, it was full of officers. And the first, one little fella came up to me, he said, what are you doing here? Who gave you permission to leave your area? I said, well, I've come down to buy some cigarettes for my men. I said, they haven't had a cigarette for days, and they're getting out of hand a bit. So if I can get some cigarettes, that might calm them down. He said, well, hurry up and get the cigarettes and get back. I said, yes, but while I'm here, I'll have a glass of beer. So I thought, well, the CO would like to know what you're lot's doing in here. So I thought, well, if he puts me on a charge, the CO will get to know. But he didn't put me on a charge. But anyway, when we got our glass of beer and the cigarettes, and we climbed back up this very steep hill of God, I thought we were never going to come to the end of it. And then we could see a glow in the darkness, see this red glow. And when we got to the airfield, the time we were away, the lads had made themselves a bit of a shack out of old timber that they found in the hedges. And inside the shack, they built a little fire to keep warm. Well, that got out of hand and they set the roof alight. The whole bloody lot collapsed. Well, this airfield was occupied by the Americans. And before you know it, there was jeeps coming in all directions with armed troops wanting to know what was going on. And of course the Yanks are bloody trigger happy at the best of times. It got a little bit overheated, you know. Fortunately, one of our officers was there at the time and calmed things down. But there was no more fires lit that night.
So the exercises obviously would continue for the rest of the time.
It went on for 10 days, and then we went back to our original place, like back to back around the Weymouth area.
Were you hearing the war news that was coming through? 1943 would be after Alamein, and the Germans were on the run a little bit.
Well, they didn't keep us up to date as much as we would like to have known about it.
Had you any feelings at this time that you were probably being trained for?
Well, we knew we were being trained to go across, but we didn't know when, nor where. But we left Little Brady, and we went on to Lyme Regis. That's another seaside place. And there we were billeted in a big house next to the railway station. And to do our PT, we used to have to do it on the road outside the railway station. That was the widest part where we did our drill parades and that. And I remember on this particular day, the PT instructor had us all on parade, and he said, how many of you can swim? So about half the platoon put their hands up. He said, right, you lot go with Corporal Jones down to the beach. And that was down a hell of a steep hill to the shore. Like, he said, go down there for an hour swimming and then get back. And he said, the rest of you who can't swim, go back to the dining hall and each man bring out a bench. So we went down and each man grabbed a bench and came back to the parade ground. And he said, lay them out in three rows and each man stand beside your bench. Now I'm going to teach you how to swim.